Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
The expectations in the Texans have always been the same. No matter the outside noise, no matter the media, any of that, like, we have a standard that we have to play to. We have a mentality that we play to, and that's the only thing that we have to play to is everything that happens in this building. And I would just say complacency, there's no place for that here at all. What we did last year was last year. What we're going to do this year is what we're going to do this year. And we can't focus on the past. So right now, it's just keeping that same mentality, and that's the swarm mentality. When all that fails, what are we going to do? We're going to go out there and swarm. And so that's what type of team we're going to be heading into this new season.
That's Will Anderson. Love Will Anderson. That was him talking about the high expectations. Could Will Anderson go from being defensive rookie of the year to defensive player of the year? Could he do that in year two? It's only been done two other times in a year or less. And when I say a year or less, Lawrence Taylor was Defensive Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
1981.
Oh, no,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. The only other time it's happened where a player has gone from Defensive Rookie of the Year to Defensive Player of the Year in just one season was in 2013 when Luke Kuechly was the one person to interrupt J.J. Watt's reign of dominance winning Defensive Player of the Year. Luke Kuechly was Defensive Rookie of the Year in 2012. He won Defensive Player of the Year in 2013. Ten players have won Defensive Rookie of the Year and gone on at some point to win Defensive Player of the Year later. But in one year, it's only been done, within a year, it's only been done twice. But Will Anderson, Seth, eighth on the odds board right now for Defensive Player of the Year in 2024.
That would set him apart from D'Amico Ryans.
That would.
One of my favorite quotes from an anonymous scout after the Will Anderson trade up and drafting of in the draft was that D'Amico just drafted himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is. Like, there's a lot, you know, defensive player from Alabama, like a salt of the earth type of dude, all of that. But the one thing about D'Amico is, and this isn't an insult at anything, like he wasn't. If D'Amico had been drafted number three overall, people would have considered his career a disappointment. You know? It's an off-ball linebacker if you draft that dude. You better be Luke Kuechly if you draft an off-ball linebacker number three overall.
Yep.
So, like, that's not an insult to his playing career at all. He had a great playing career, even after a torn Achilles. But you're hoping that Will Anderson becomes more of an actual player,
yes,
you know, beyond just rookie. Oh, and the other similarity was that they both won Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So the players ahead, Micah Parsons is the favorite right now. I think it's interesting. In looking at the odds, you look at the names on here, Seth, and the only one that's not somebody whose job is to go sack the quarterback, I mean, their job, honestly, all these guys, is to sack the quarterback. Like, Chris Jones is the only outlier because he's an interior defensive lineman.
But his job is to sack the quarterback. I mean, that's what if he was a run stuffer, he wouldn't be on there.
Yeah, you know? Right. His job. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. His job is still to sack the quarterback. But the rest of these guys are all guys who are largely edge guys. It's almost like Defensive Player of the Year. Like, edge rusher has become to Defensive Player of the Year what quarterback has become to MVP.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the sexy thing to do is go get the quarterback.
Well, and it's just, you know what's happened too. Well, this is why. I think the league, I don't want to get too X's and O's here, but the league has transitioned more to playing more zone defense, playing conservatively. A lot of stuff that you don't necessarily have to have an awesome cornerback. Or even if you do have an awesome cornerback, he doesn't get highlighted as much because he's in off coverage or he's playing zone. So because of that, a lot of the drivers of a lot of these defenses are the pass rush. That's how it's always been. Going back to the old days of Tampa, too, you can only do some of that zone stuff on the back end in the NFL if you've got a hellacious pass rush up front. And, I think it speaks to the importance of that position. Yeah. It really – the quarterback – is still the most important position overall. So who can affect the quarterback and the defenses that you're playing? It's the edge rushers more so than ever.
Yeah. Micah Parsons, TJ Watt, Nick Bosa, Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, Aiden Hutchinson, and Josh Allen from Jacksonville. Those are the seven names ahead of Will Anderson. Will Anderson, 25-1. I don't think I'd put money on Will Anderson to win Defensive Player of the Year this year, but I could see it in his future. I think he's got that kind of potential.
I think with both him and Danielle Hunter on opposite sides, it gets really interesting just into, you can only slide the line one way or you got to max protect or whatever it might be. As much as the Texans made a huge leap last year in terms of record, and they're not going to gain as many wins on the season, even if they're the best, if they're the best team in the league, they're not going to gain as many wins this year and their schedule, no matter how much they improve. I think defensively, they could take a drastic jump forward, and way more so than people are projecting right now. Because when you look at the roster strength, the defensive backfield, there are holes. Yeah. Linebacker, there's question marks about just exactly how good you can be and who's going to play where. But I think a lot of that is you got to look at that's how those guys were graded without as good of a pass rush up front. So I think there can be a collective, a collective growth above just the A plus B on this, because if you get that pass rush up front, it makes everybody else better.
I was Googling some stuff yesterday. I was trying to find an old article of mine in the Houston Press, and a few links came up to different articles. One of the headlines from May 10th of last year, shock jock turned blogger from time to time, Sean Pendergast.
Oh, headline, what are you writing in that rag of his?
Headline, Will Anderson trade among biggest overpays in NFL draft history.
I'm canceling my subscription to the Houston
it's
Press.
Free.
What did you call him Pizza Boy? No. Did you call him Pizza Boy?
No.
Huh?
No. As it turns out, while it was a very grabby headline, out, the gist of the article was empirically based on the Jimmy Johnson charts and such.
Yeah.
It was one of the biggest overpays. I went back and read the article, and it was interesting. I had embedded a poll that I did on May 5th. So this is probably a week or so after the draft last year. So the smoke was still coming off of the Will Anderson trade around NFL circles. People questioning whether
Right. Well, that was everybody at first was very impressed. Just people love loud noises and big booms and fireworks and all of that. So I think everybody at first was impressed with just the ballsiness of it. And then afterwards, there was a little bit of a whiplash the next day and through the week where people were thinking, like, okay, well, now that we're not all drunk on the moment, and especially, on draft day, you've got your huge reaction initially, and then you're going on into each successive pick after that. It's not the best time for reflection.
Yep.
Yeah, it did end up being an increasing number of people showing how smart they were by pointing out that, man, that was a lot to pay to move up for a non-quarterback.
Yeah, well, especially when the Texans were, giving up their own pick and not the Cleveland pick in the trade.
Oh, that's right, because it's so stupid. Everybody knows they're going to be the worst team in the league next year.
Right.
So stupid. Or did this Sean Pendergast hack right there?
Or they're literally, I did not, or they're literally going to beat Cleveland in a playoff game. What I mean? But I put up a poll a week or so after the draft. And this is where I credit Texan fans, because this is, I think, who largely is voting in the polls that I'm putting up about the Texans on my Twitter feed are Texan fans. Credit to you, Texan fans, for just blindly following Nick Caserio into the breach. On the heels of our conversation with Nick Caserio today, I must have posted this poll on a day where you and I had just talked to Nick after the draft. So I said, on the heels of our conversation with Nick Caserio today on Sports Radio 610, this is for Texan fans. Do you care about the amount of draft capital he gave up for Will Anderson? 63.5% said, I don't care at all.
Yeah.
Another 27.7% said, I'll care in 2024. 8.8% said, I do care right now. So,
and a lot of people didn't end up caring. Like, that's the sign that it worked out is the people that were kind of waiting until 2024 to care.
I was one of them. I was one of
right,
them.
Right, right. Yeah. Would approve of it now. I think the whole thing about the justification for trading up for Will Anderson, it was difficult. It was difficult to appreciate is a lot of it was the intangible stuff. It was going to be his leadership, his energy, his attitude, all of that stuff. And the vast majority of the time when people talk about that in a player, it's overstated. And that's why I was nervous about just how much they were overpaying, quote unquote, to get all of those intangibles. But just like it is with DeMeco, you know, where I could tell, like everybody like played with him, could tell he was just a different type of dude immediately. You can tell after a year with Will Anderson, like, okay, this guy's just wired differently.
Yes.
And all right, I see and understand the intangibles. That's for real. That's not just somebody using it as a way to talk themselves into something. I get it.
Yeah.
So like, and that's the stuff you could just. You can never know for sure just what, like how your front office is operating. Do they actually know what they're talking about
right.
when it comes to that stuff?
Intangibles is not just some generic noun that gets thrown around. There are degrees to that, too. It's just it's not as easily measurable as something that's a statistic or an analytic stat, you know?
Well, that's where like Jeff Luhnow had said once, kind of talking about team chemistry.
Yep.
Just because you can't measure it doesn't mean it's not real.
Bingo.
Like Bill James, who's the father of advanced analytics, has basically said the same thing, that you can't. You can't get stuck thinking that just because there's not a measurement for it yet that it doesn't exist. And I think that's where you that's where you also just end up having to blindly trust your GM and your head coach until they either prove that they know what they're talking about or not. And so far, I feel like they knew what they were talking about with Will Anderson. And I also think Tank Dell is another one. I think like I don't think if Tank Dell has a bad attitude or something, or even just like a milquetoast attitude. I don't think he gets drafted where he does.
Yeah.
I think like if Tank Dell didn't have a certain extra something to
him,
like which is, you know, Bobby Sloak has just gushed about his attitude and his competitiveness and just how contagious it is. Like you don't look at a dude that size and draft him where he did unless you think there's also something special to his character.
No doubt. I mean, as far as Tank goes, I mean, DeMeco was asked about Tank in his press conference earlier this week, just like, how's he doing? Like, how's the leg?
Yeah.
And DeMeco went into how devastating the loss was, used the word inspirational to talk about Tank Dell. So, yeah, I think you're spot on there. Hey, back to the Astros. Our friend Jackie Goss is tweeting us, Seth. He said, I don't think the Astros or Bagwell realize how many fans are getting sick of him. All this GM by committee will get Crane, Reggie Jackson, and Biggio, too, if he gets more involved. It is a shame to see that. Like, Jeff Bagwell is one of my favorite Houston athletes of all time. Like, like for somebody who really likes Jeff Bagwell, like, I like Jeff Bagwell a lot, the player. I think he's a great dude as well. Like, that is a tough part for me to watch as a fan of his. Like, yeah, this is maybe not outside of Houston because people outside of Houston aren't as plugged into the day-to-day as we are here. We feel it acutely here. But who cares about outside of Houston? Like, here in Houston, I think this is doing damage to Jeff Bagwell with a lot of Astro fans.
This is the problem that, like, the part that we were talking about in the broadcast was where Bagwell kind of either, like, pretended not to know or just definitely didn't know what ex-WOBA was, which is, it's fine if, you know, like, I think in any organization, yes, it's good to have a diversity of opinions. And if Bagwell's not a stats guy, then, you know, so be it. Except that, I don't want the guy who's rejecting the analytics to not even have a basic understanding
right.
of the analytics.
Right.
Like, why? Like, what? Like, it honestly, it's frustrating because it takes this organization, which was at the forefront of so many things in baseball, it takes them back to 2002 when, like, the argument about analytics or no analytics, that's dead and gone. That is dead and gone. And most teams in baseball have figured out a way to incorporate both the old school sentiment and knowledge with the new age stuff and the analytics and the computer and all that.
Yeah.
And now it feels like every time I hear some comment like that, where a guy who's making decisions on guys like Jose Abreu doesn't even understand what he rejects, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
That's frustrating. Like I'm guessing there were people in the Astros organization last year on the analytical side that were like, hey, listen, as far as Abreu goes, this is what we're seeing and it doesn't look good. And like that was apparently largely ignored.
Yep.
You know, I could look at the back of the baseball card and tell that you better beware of a guy his age that had a decline in the second half of the year. Like, and I don't care if there's differing opinions, but I got to have them respect the other side
for sure
enough to actually just basically try to understand it.
How do you like this? This is a follow up from Jackie on Twitter. Says Bagwell doesn't miss a chance to hike his leg on analytics and Callis knows it. I think he's giving Bagwell rope. Callis sees what's up. He's on our side. He's setting Bagwell up, huh? Ooh.
What if he does like a pop quiz on analytical acronyms or something? Oh. Just out of nowhere the next time he's broadcasting?
Here's the problem. Is the evidence would appear to be within the Astros building right now is if Bagwell failed it, who cares? I mean, Bagwell literally just went on a broadcast. Like, if Callis
right.
gave
oh,
him a
right,
quiz,
right.
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Like, it would be funny. It'd be funny, but it wouldn't, like, I feel like Crane would be like, eh, Bagwell doesn't know what ex-WOBA is. He's Jeff Bagwell.
The problem is there's so many good movies where the team of scientists has this opinion, but then old Chester in overalls comes by, you know, yeah. with a big old long white beard, and he looks at it and he's like, well, what you didn't do is you got to clean the spark plugs. And all the scientists are like, oh, we were over here working yeah. with algorithms, but old Jesse, or what did I call him? Chester. Old Chester knew
Chester.
Exactly what it was.
Chester.
It was a fouled up spark plug.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. Jenkins came in here and fixed it. Good job,
yeah,
Jenkins.
Yeah, like Bagwell might as well be going out to batting practice in an old pair of coveralls or overalls with no t-shirt underneath and a big old chaw of tobacco.
Well, they're
like, well, here's your problem. And then, boom, Abreu's fixed.
Reportedly, Bagwell's getting super hands-on with Abreu.
Right,
right. Did you
right.
see that
yeah,
story?
He's
like,
watching him.
Yeah, he's
yeah.
watching him, and he's sitting with him, and he's talking to him. And that feels like the last stop on the way to something that Astro fans are rooting for, probably.
I'd say at this point. Well, if people had ever paid attention and listened to my plan to allowing athletes – age 33 or older to go ahead and use PEDs, we wouldn't have to be in this place.
Be a better team.
Abreu would be having the best season of his life.
He would. We could look at the back of the baseball card proudly, for sure. Adam Spillane retweeted something I said yesterday. I kind of tweeted what I said earlier in the show, that the early 2024 version of Jose Abreu might be the worst everyday or near everyday player I've ever watched. Not hyperbole. Adam Spillane, baseball spo, he's our on the scene, Astros dude, man, Spo does a great job. Of the 922 players to have appeared in a major league game entering Wednesday, Jose Abreu's -1.1 BWAR is the worst.
Hmm.
He is 922nd out of 922 players in B wins
Sorry.
Above replacement.
Sorry, Sean, that's not on the back of the baseball card.
No, that's true.
I only trust things like batting average? Oh, no, not that. It turns out I don't know. Slugging? No, I don't trust that either.
Yeah, not good, man.
So he's the worst in baseball. You know, the one graphic that I saw that I liked was when they were talking about Yiner Diaz and all the stops he's had to make on the potential past pitches.
Yeah.
It was a lot. It was by a pretty healthy margin.
Yeah.
He's had to stop more balls
yes.
than any player in baseball, which I'm like, oh, I guess when you pitch 22 different dudes,
yeah.
it's bound to be
a lot of whom aren't good. Like, yeah, yeah. You mean a lot of these guys are skipping the ball up to home plate? You don't say, yeah.
But that says Yiner Diaz hasn't had a pass ball yet. And I'm thinking about what this would have been with Maldonado back there. That's when some people up in Chicago are like, hey.
You can't catch.
I love watching these White Sox people reach out to Astros people on social media. They're like, hey, just exactly what was so magical about everything with Maldonado last
yeah.
year? And Astros fans are like,
I'm glad it's somebody else's problem. That's how I feel, right? All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. On a Thursday. Appreciate you tuning in. Drive safe into work today. Bill Belichick, we found out what his next assignment is going to be. How do we think he does in this role? And some of the little factoids from the article that we only got to touch on briefly yesterday, this
yeah.
Seth Wickersham, Don Van Natta piece about how Bill Belichick may have gotten kind of screwed out of the Atlanta job by Robert Kraft. There's some really interesting stuff in here, and the Texans actually pop up here a couple
That's
of times.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We do pop up into that.
How did Bobby Slowik do in his interviews with the Falcons? We're going to find out, and that's coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Some nice jerseys that you got there, Seth. Those are really nice.
The kind people with the Houston Texans football organization, they had reached out to all the former Texans, and they were cleaning the house on a lot of the junk they have everywhere. So they had a bunch of our authentic jerseys that we had worn.
Yeah.
And I'll put it on the YouTube stream right here. So they sent my home and my away jersey from the inaugural season. There's an inaugural patch on there and everything.
That's cool.
But we were just talking about how, like, they're tailored to be super, super tight up against your shoulder pads. And, like, so, like, this is a 48, you know, where I probably had, like, a 54 or 56-inch chest at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, like, super tight. But for a while, like, I don't think with the Texans, with the Jaguars, definitely. Like, we would go out to do appearances on a Tuesday wearing these game jerseys. Oh. And it's, like, and they're, like, super tight around the shoulders because you use double-sided tape to stick them to your shoulder pads and everything. And it's, like you'd look like such a fat ass going out in these things. Just, like a narrow-shouldered, pear-shaped loser as you're trying to tell kids to read. They're looking at this fat ass up in front of them like, how about you read the nutritional label, fatty? That's what the kids would say to me. And very demeaning, very demeaning.
Yeah. Pretty good comeback by a little kid on you right there. We need that kid to come right for Payne and Pendergast.
I had to feed the kid the line. I handed it to him on an index card.
I say this, and then you say this, and people are going to think you're hilarious. Is it even more embarrassing when you're wandering around a mall trying to find your teammates at an appearance?
Oh, yeah. So everybody, you've been paying attention. We had to wear these jerseys that were not cut out for wearing out in public without shoulder pads on.
My favorite story.
And we were doing this thing one year. This is when I was with the Jaguars. And we were thanking the fans because there was like an NFL commercial going on at the same time where the players would come in wearing their full uniforms, no shoulder pads, but like pants, turf shoes and everything socks pulled up. And they would thank the fans. So we were doing a local version of it. And we went to one of the shopping malls. And so there were like four or five of us. We're wearing our damn football uniforms at 1 p.m. on a Tuesday. And, like, you know, but we got film crews around us and everything. So, like, obviously something's going on. But I kind of, you know, I get distracted at times.
Happens.
Was I a kid that had to wear a leash when I was young? No, but I probably should have. Like, by the grace of God, I made it through. So we're kind of doing this appearance, and we're getting set up, and I'm looking around, and I wanted to see if there's a Sbarro's at this place. And then all of a sudden, I realized I'd gotten separated from the pack, and I'm standing in this food court wearing my full football uniform with a lot of people looking at me like, who's this weirdo? Or like, how,
by yourself.
Like, is he trying to pick up chicks by like dressing like by wearing his football uniform to the mall? I think that's what people thought. I think they thought I was trying to pick up chicks. And then I started to panic a little bit because I was lost in the mall with no wallet. There's no place to put my wallet. They had my wallet. They had my cell phone, Sean. Where am I going to put a 7-pound cell phone in my pants in 1998? You know? Isn't it out there? I can't put it down the front of my pants.
Oh, they were big phones.
They were big. It would be anatomically unrealistic.
Yeah. Putting them down the front of your pants wouldn't have been the worst
move.
He's
got a 7-inch phone in his pocket.
Yeah, that's right. Is that a phone in your pocket?
You're not happy to see me. Yeah, no. He doesn't look happy at all.
Can I ask you, with no wallet, how you planned on paying for the pizza at the Sbarro you were looking for in the food court?
Well, I wasn't planning on it. I was planning on getting somebody else to pay for it.
That's my guy right there. I like that.
Do you guys know who I am? And then I turned around and pointed at the nameplate. Sorry. There's not a little Texans logo above it, but you know the deal.
You know the deal. You know, God, that's one of my favorite stories. Shed Payne wandering around the mall like an 8-year-old.
One of my favorite customizable Seth Payne jersey is our fan who he has a number 91 jersey, and on the back it says unbearable.
I've seen that's your Twitter picture.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. So Bill Belichick is he's not coaching. We know he thought he was getting the Falcons job. We'll talk about that in a second. Some interesting factoids from an ESPN piece. But we found out what his next assignment is. He was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. He will be joining the Pat McAfee crew for the NFL draft this season. They're doing an alternate broadcast of the draft on ESPN Plus, and that'll be where Bill Belichick will provide draft analysis.
Your first live event post-coaching, maybe, you know, in the year off of coaching, being with a bunch of idiots like our particular show, and why did you agree to do this with us? We are so incredibly thankful.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. It's always draft day, draft weekend's always an exciting time for everybody, for the teams that are building their teams and for the fans and for everybody involved in it. So, you know, it's a great event, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it, you know, from the other side. It'll be fun to be in Detroit, you know, be with you guys and get your expertise.
Oh, whoa, Bill. Yeah. We don't need that now. Okay, we don't need that type of chatter now.
Is that really,
honestly, I watched that. It didn't look like Belichick was ribbing them about their expertise or anything.
No, at all. No. He seemed,
I felt bad. He kind of looked like, he almost looked a little confused that they were taking it that way. But he also did it with 6 Lombardi trophies behind him.
He did. That was a power move by him. That was cool.
I'm like, man, okay, he doesn't have a good microphone. The lighting sucks, but he's got 6 Lombardi trophies behind him that are very well lit. I'm like, all right, I guess his background is okay.
Yeah, trophies cancel out a lot of other stuff. Is that a draw for you? Are you curious about what Belichick's takes would be on the draft?
I am. I actually recorded his entire appearance. I'm going to watch after the show because I read a couple of little tidbits, and one that was fascinating from a Texans perspective was that, and I don't know if he said this on McAfee or on one of his other ESPN appearances, he said that none of the really accurate, good information leaks out at the draft until about 12 hours beforehand, which is very interesting if you'll consider when Daniel Jeremiah did his final mock draft.
Oh, yeah.
It predicted that the Texans would draft both C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson.
Yes.
That was... If I remember correctly, I believe that was the morning
before.
Of the draft.
It was the day. It was around the draft. It might have been the morning of the draft.
So we kind of figured, like, all right, he got the sanctioned info dump, and like, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because if it happened within the 24 hours before the draft, it sounded like that's the sanctioned dump.
Yeah.
That's the one that both D'Amico maybe, and I would say honestly, if you're going to try to get favor with somebody, I'd say Daniel Jeremiah would be a good guy because I think he. Almost ironically enough, because I think he seems like the most incorruptible of dudes. He's not going to lie to you or like tell you something that another guy wants you to believe or anything.
He's
I think he really
solid.
Tries to be a straight shooter.
Yeah, he's very, very solid.
But he has information about everybody.
Yep.
You know, he lives between those two worlds.
Yep. So Belichick, we know, wanted the Atlanta job. There's a long-form piece on ESPN that's really, really good about how Belichick didn't wind up with the job, how Robert Kraft may have given him a negative reference to Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, teams that Belichick would be interested in coaching now that he's not coaching Atlanta include Philadelphia, Dallas, and the Giants. I'm sure the head coaches at those teams were thrilled that bit of information is out there now. The two things that Texan fans are probably interested in from this article, Atlanta was concerned ultimately about who Belichick would bring in with him. Perhaps because they thought that he was going to only stick around for a couple of years to break Shula's record and that the next guy might have to be one of these guys. And they name Josh McDaniels, Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, and Jack Easterby.
Yeah, Beasterby.
They were worried about
They're bringing in the Beasterby.
The bunny, the old Easter bunny coming into the building there, yeah.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Belichick did want Easterby in his organization just because Belichick used him the way he was supposed to be used, which was Belichick did not use Jack Easterby as his quasi-GM.
Right.
You know, like...
Right.
Easterby's a guy that can get in the good graces of the players when he's looked at as, like, you know, the player programs guy. Listen to the way the players talk about Dylan Thompson right now, the player programs guy.
Yes.
Or player development guy. They love him.
They love
him. Like, CJ, Will Anderson, they gush about him. And that's what a lot of players in New England would say about Jack Easterby. Somehow, the Texans and Bill O'Brien decided that, no, as good as he is in that role, he'd be even better, kind of like being a co-GM.
Yeah, running
and
the team.
It was, that's where everything just went way, way, way awry. I think Belichick probably looks at Easterby as like, yeah, this is a guy who serves his purpose very effectively, but I got to keep the guide rails on him. And that maybe in New England, he was... I get this picture of him in New England, like, probably starting to get on O'Brien's nerve, or Bill Belichick's nerves, and, like, him wanting to know everything about everything.
Yeah.
And it probably, like, fine, just go off to Houston. I'm sick of you.
Yeah.
You know, and now that he's maybe been humbled a little bit, okay, he can come back to Belichick and, you know, be his spy slash player programs
That's
guy.
That's his mole. Yeah. The other interesting thing, if you're a Texan fan, we know Bobby Slowik was interviewing for the Falcons job, among several jobs Bobby Slowik interviewed for. It turns out he finished third for the Atlanta job. He interviewed in Atlanta late in the process, and after they interviewed Bobby Slowik, and Bobby Slowik impressed them in the interview. That was made clear in the piece. The hierarchy, the brain trust of Atlanta, sat down and kind of voted on all the candidates, including Belichick. Yeah. Raheem Morris got the job. Obviously, he finished first. Mike McDonald, the former DC for the Ravens, who's now the head coach in Seattle, finished second. Bobby Slowik finished third. Bill Belichick didn't finish in anybody's top three for the job that voted on this in the Atlanta
building.
Right.
Now, and this is where it gets interesting, because the headline grabber is that Bob Kraft supposedly called up Arthur Blank, talked about how you'll never have a warm conversation with him, you can't trust him, and that it's not clear. Bob Kraft at least said to somebody else, not necessarily Arthur Blank, but presumably, that that Belichick is very, very, very arrogant.
Yeah.
And to which I think most of the football world said, oh, you don't say.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, he's arrogant.
Breaking news, yeah.
The hyper-successful football coach is arrogant. My God, I never knew such a thing could happen. But I think what I took from it was, whether or not Bob Kraft talks smack to Arthur Blank about Bill Belichick, I don't think Belichick was going to get that job. Because Arthur Blank was going to wanted kind of a more democratic process. And Arthur Blank personally was blown away by Bill Belichick. But when it came to Rich McKay and Fontenot and one of the other front office members, put yourself in their shoes. You got this coaching legend with a reputation for being an autocrat comes in. And he's saying, like, oh, no, I want to work by committee and everything. Those dudes in Atlanta aren't buying that or believing it.
Nope.
You know, like, they're just like, yeah, that's, I think Belichick might believe that at the moment, but it's like a lion telling you, like, I promise not to eat any sheep.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, the lion might really in that moment not want to eat any sheep, but at some point he gets hungry.
And then
you
the
know,
sheep
or
show
agitated
up.
Yeah. Or just, yeah.
Yep.
And I think they're going to deep six that no matter what. And I think that's what happened with a lot of the other teams around the league that were looking at him, was they almost respect Belichick's ability to get power and or the threat of that too much to actually give him the job.
Yep, that's a good way to put it. All right, so in the last 24 hours, one Houston coach wins a press conference, one Houston coach badly loses a press conference. That is next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. You look like you got something to say there.
I don't think you realized what a remedial question I was asking you during the break.
Yeah.
You were trying to explain something to me on a 101 level.
Yeah.
Where I need it on, like, I'm repeating this class for the third time level.
Okay.
We did a little discussion of this Bob Kraft versus Bill Belichick and the Atlanta Falcons job and all that earlier. It was a really, really long article. And I was just asking you, like, okay, I have a hard time. If I gotta make an outline of things to talk about, I tried to do it yesterday, and I ended up with, like, 23 bullet points.
Yeah, it's hard, man.
It's just too much.
Yeah.
Like, so how do you take, like, a long, long something like that and boil it down to just, like, two or three little bullet points?
Yeah.
I wasn't asking for your actual opinion. I'm like, how does a normal brain work is what I'm asking.
What's the process? Yeah, because I got it down to about five. I always think of just, like, and for me, I think of what's the most interesting. I put myself in the shoes of a listener and go, is that interesting to me?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a listener to Payne and Pendergast.
Listener of a hot wife. That I'm trying to paint a picture here.
Is oh, you want to get really immerse yourself into it?
He's super rich.
What's his credit rating?
He's sitting in his office right now, and it's got like an entire side of the building window, like floor to ceiling windows.
This is symptomatic. This is the 23 bullet points again. You don't need to go that deep into the listener's life, Seth.
What was his childhood like?
I know.
Where did he even grow up, Sean? How am I supposed to get into this guy's shoes?
Does he have mommy issues?
He might be wearing boots for all I know.
He could be. So we've had two press conferences with Houston coaches in the last couple of days. And I would say one was a winner and one was a loser. I'll start with Joe Espada. This was my first I haven't had a moment like this with Joe Espada yet. I think Joe Espada is still kind of trying to find himself amidst a team that has a lot of deficiencies right now.
And he's been in a lot of situations that don't have a great answer because they're not really things that are his fault. There have been, you know, questions about the lineup or fair, except one of the things, I mean, he at the very least moved Abreu down very quickly and aggressively.
Yes.
He bucked him down in the lineup instead of waiting for 3 months to figure it out.
Yeah.
So that part, that for the most part, there's not been a whole lot to say, well, man, I can't believe it. I mean, there's been a few things, but it's not like the larger issues are not his right now.
Yeah, if I'm assigning blame, Espada's pretty far down my list right now, considering the issues with the pitching staff. He is. But that said, the one thing that you can't do is get the fan base going against you, especially when you're in a city with two other coaches who I think the fan base are all in on right now, in Ime Udoka and D'Amico Ryans. This was my first bleep you moment to Joe Espada yesterday. Like, I was angry when I heard this answer to, why do you think Jose Abreu, what gives you confidence Jose Abreu is going to pull out of this?
History, you know, the back of his baseball card, you know, he can do it.
Okay. Yeah. This back of the baseball card stuff has to stop, man. It's got to stop. And it started with Bagwell, and it is to me, it's insulting to, I'm not even going to say it's insulting to intelligent baseball people. Like, this is insulting to your fans. This is insulting to anybody with a working set of eyes that watches Jose Abreu do things like bat .078 and handle a ground ball last night or yesterday like it's a live grenade, you know?
This is where the weird thing is, and this is where I guess you wonder, okay, is it the end of the dynasty or whatever you might call it? It's two separate obstacles, actually getting to where the Astros are now, but then to sustain it and maintain it over time. It's really like a 3 or 4 part series, but there's definitely like skills that you need in the beginning versus skills that you need to sustain it. And what we've seen from just the Patriots in football or various other dynasties, go back to the 49ers in football, back in the Bill Walsh days, those teams that managed to really stretch it out are also usually pretty good at knowing to say goodbye a year early.
When to bail.
Instead of a year late.
Yep.
Like, when do you, like, you gotta, it's best to let somebody walk when it still hurts a little bit. And maybe you miss out on a year or two of production, but over time, you're gonna be a lot better for it. This one's a double whammy because you brought a guy in.
Yeah.
You brought a guy in when he was at that moment where, man, another team might be saying, you know what? Maybe he's got another good year in him, but this is probably the beginning of the end. We got to get rid of him. So you double. Not only are you not the White Sox, but you're also like actually doubling down on that mistake of retaining the guy.
Yeah, there's nothing you can harken back to. Let's pretend they signed Springer to that big deal, you know, to something
right,
like in 2020, and Springer can still play. So it's not a perfect. There's no perfect analogy because nobody is as bad as Jose Abreu in all of baseball right now, literally. But let's pretend, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, Springer sees a dip to where he's not nearly worth $25 million a year.
Yeah.
Well, at least you got the World Series MVP you can look back at in 2017. And you got all those leadoff home runs you can look back at. And all those times that George Springer ran himself into a wall for you, the Astro fans. Granted, sometimes he'd miss a week of games after running into a wall. But still, he gave his all and he was incredibly popular. You have none of that with Jose Abreu. He's been bad from jump since he got here.
He's been bad from jump. You know, the one that's, I guess if I were going to start looking at the backs of baseball cards and think, okay, here's your chance for redemption or maybe he'll turn it around. You try to pull that with Pujols in 2011 or 2012 when he goes to LA and, you know, he fell off a cliff, not to this degree, obviously. And he was still a good baseball player. Like, he was still a good baseball, and he was 32 years old.
Yeah.
Like, that was the weirdest thing about Pujols was it wasn't age-related, whatever. you've got a 37-year-old you're talking about
yes.
here.
Yeah.
And Jose Abreu. And he's like, Pujols was not living up to his contract, mm-hmm. but he wasn't the worst player in baseball. This is Abreu as the worst player. Like, this is worse than the Pujols deal was for L.A. Oh, like, relative to how bad the player is
yeah.
while still getting a good chunk of money. Sure, it wasn't a 10-year deal or anything, but, like, Pujols was still an above-average player, like a very good player. He just wasn't MVP-caliber, dude.
Well, plus, that was an owner, too, who, to my knowledge, was willing to still spend even with mistakes on the roster, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm this is not me saying Jim Crane is not investing in the team. He obviously is. They have a super high payroll. But I think they're packed to the gills now on payroll. You know, like, they're not in a position to be flexible at all with any of this. You know, and I'll tell you what it does, too. Seth, is that it makes it very conflicting in rooting for Jose Abreu. At the very basic core, as an Astro fan, I should be rooting for Jose Abreu when he comes up to the plate each and every time to get a hit, to hit a home run, to drive in a run. My fear now with Jose Abreu is that every good few games that he has gives him another 2 months that they're not even going to just touch him. You know, like it's
yeah.
it's almost like we all see the writing on the wall. Like, he's never going to be the player even close to what they thought they were getting when they signed him. And I feel like the only good solution is to ultimately just get rid of the guy, punt on him, and for now put John Singleton at first base. He's better than Abreu. But as long as Abreu's on the roster, he's going to get used. He's not just going to sit there and do what? Like, normally if a guy's getting older and he's sitting there, you go, well, he can at least be a pinch hitter for us or DH. He can't hit.
He's laying on his deathbed, like with an IV drip. He's loaded up on fentanyl, eating nothing but ice chips, and he's just not dying.
Yeah,
they're gonna extend it out for. There's one family member that's like, no, keep the stomach pumping. And that Jim Crane is that family member. Like, everybody else is like, my God, the guy is suffering. Can we please just let him die? Can we take out the breathing? No, he will live forever.
And the nurse says,
let him go.
He actually had a good day today. He opened his eyes. Like,
oh. Right, yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. We know what the end is here. That's the manager / coach who did not have a good press conference. Ime Udoka showed a very playful side a little earlier this week in his exit press conference. I kind of enjoyed this. No, he didn't.
Okay.
He did not.
Was he at a WNBA press conference?
Ime Udoka.
God,
no,
please.
He
wasn't the guy that asked that question, was he?
It was the Rockets. No, that was Greg Doyle. We'll get to him in the eight. Ime Udoka, he was asked, is he happy with his decision to come coach the Houston Rockets?
A year ago at this time, there were multiple openings. You were very highly thought of around the league. Reflecting back on it, how justified your mind that this was the right decision?
Well, I went to Phoenix, Milwaukee, or Philly. We'd be in the playoffs now. So, being able to build something was more appealing than jumping into something that has a 2-year window. It became more appealing for sure.
He's like Steven. Remember that comedian Steven Wright? The guy with the curly hair who's just all his jokes were told in this tone like that.
Incredibly monotone.
That was pretty funny right there. He's like, well, you know, if I'd gone to these other teams, I'd still be playing right now, you know? So he was joking around, obviously. But I like that little playful side of Ime Udoka. He had another one where he was asked
Steven
about.
Steven Wright's still around, by the way.
Is he? Okay, gotcha.
He hasn't done as well. Like, as everything has shifted more towards storytelling.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And like,
instead of one-liners.
Humor or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's big.
It's moved towards. It's moved towards storytelling and comedians who swear they're not going to be serious about anything except their own cancellations.
Right.
I've watched 29 bits about cancel culture before I got out of bed this morning.
Yep. So. Here was Ime Udoka's other little funny bit here. He was asked about Jalen Green's ascension in the second half of the season.
Jalen's late season surge was a real story of the season. I'm curious, did you have any parting words or advice for him before you guys broke for the summer, so to speak?
Yeah, do it earlier, and we're playing right now.
All right, Ime. Ime won the presser, man. He's got
jokes.
Yeah,
no, I think if you did an approval rating on Ime Udoka right now, it might be... Ooh. Well, it would be high. That's interesting.
Don't mind if I do.
The Rockets' prospects for a championship next year compared to, like, if you were to do futures right now, Vegas would still have the Astros as a much better chance despite the record right now, of winning the World Series next year than people would have of the Rockets winning the NBA championship.
Oh, without question, yeah.
And yet, I feel like Espada is probably a much more popular coach right now. His approval rating is higher than Espada. Excuse me.
Udoka's
approval rating is a lot higher than Espada's.
For
right
sure.
Now.
Yeah, for sure. Because people look at the world in 5-day windows. You know, like it's all recency bias. Yeah. Yeah. Good job, Ime, with the jokes at the press conference earlier this week.
The thing with Udoka and Rafael Stone right now is none of it feels forced. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't feel like I have to talk myself into anything with the Rockets. There are question marks and considerations and exactly how are they going to really teach your star players to coexist, yada, 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 mm-hmm. all that stuff. But none of it feels like I'm convincing myself that this is the guy, like I did with Silas, frankly.
Yeah.
It can work. It's cool that he's soft-spoken. Don't worry about it. Like, I've got zero of that with Udoka. I just trust that he's going to do a good job.
I do, too. I think he's really, really good. Text message, a lot of Abreu text coming in. Someone says Abreu has a DNR, a do not resuscitate.
He never signed it.
Yeah,
that's
right,
the problem.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't have it.
It's intimidating. You sit down, you got this long list of, like, have you ever filled a DNR out with somebody? Oh.
I've never had.
If you've never filled out a DNR with somebody while one of your siblings is, like, strongly suggesting to the sick one what the answer should be, you don't know discomfort.
Oh, dude. That sounds brutal.
I'm staunchly opposed to relatives dying. It's really a pain in the butt for everybody involved. I would bow out of it if you have a chance.
Text message, I'd rather have Yuli. No, here's the thing. I'd rather have anybody.
Yuli may have actually been back in a hotel room or something. He's in the Atlanta organization.
He is. He's signing.
Whereabouts unknown, but he's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
He's like a thumbtack in a vacuum cleaner bag. He's in there somewhere. Like, you don't want to go digging too hard for
right,
it.
Right, right. Here's the thing. There's no bad answer to I would rather have blank instead of Abreu right now. Like, there's I'd rather you could put a broom with a bucket for a head, and it would not have a negative 1.1 B WAR. I'll tell you, it'd have a zero
or negative OPS plus.
Yes,
or anything.
Which we didn't
know.
Think was mathematically possible.
Yeah, I feel like what kind of damage are you doing to the stat itself that you've gone into negative territory? I don't know.
This, you know what? Patrick Creighton just texted me. Patrick's listening to the show. You can hear Patrick and Sean Bajani on Area 45 at night. Those guys are doing an awesome job right now with some awesome local night radio. Brings up a great point, Seth, about, and I think it kind of illustrates maybe the shift in thinking with the Astros. You talked about getting out a year early as opposed to a year late. They got out a year early on Dallas Keuchel. You know, like
they dug in
and said, we're not giving this to you. And he had to sit around for a long time, remember?
And I would say, even though it didn't work out and it was hard to watch, but they got out of Charlie Morton too early. But I was still okay with it just because that's in line with the philosophy of, like, you know what, more times than not. A guy like Charlie Morton, who had just been a vast disappointment in a lot of regards, that just got this bump from the coaching and everything, and pitch selection, everything else they do in Houston, that as he got older, and remember, he had a lot of injuries in his career too. Mm-hmm. A few guys like that are going to happen where you feel like, we could have hung on to him. But the overall theory is like, no, if there's really, realistically, we don't want to talk ourselves into being in love with somebody for longer than we need to.
Yep. All right, let's get to the 8 at 8, the Ocho. Eight stories for you. You're listening to KILT.
And thanks for listening, Patrick Creighton.
KILT, yeah, thanks. We appreciate
Patrick is a busy dude.
He is.
He's got like a 14-hour day.
He does. And the energy level is high at nighttime, for sure.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.